From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of March 2023. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, with Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at willag.org or in your favorite podcast applications.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today at $6.33, a penny and a quarter lower. July at $6.15.5 on its settlement price, down 2.25. And December futures at $5.60 for the new crop, down 1.25. May soybeans at $14.86, up 9.5 cents. July 5.5 higher, $14.66.75 the settlement price. And new crop November beans were down 4.5 cents. They settled at $13.09 for the day. May bean meal at $4.62.70, down $3.30. The May bean oil at $57.99, a settlement price 53 cents higher. Soft red winter wheat down 9.75 at $7.75 for the May. The July at $7.08.5, down 11. And the hard red July at $8.15.25. That's the harvest month there, down 7.5 cents. Live cattle futures at $155.52.5, 87.5 cents lower. Feeders at $199.15, down 80 cents. And lean hogs $1.45 lower for 100 pounds at $91.87.5. Crude oil up 38 cents a barrel at $67.31. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.53.5. That's a penny and a tenth lower in the wholesale price of gasoline today. A penny and a half higher at $2.48.1 per gallon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He is with agmarket.net to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us for the day.
Well, good afternoon, Ty. Glad to be here for the first day of spring.
Yeah, the first full official day of spring, and the thing we really wanted to talk about, I suppose, was a 120-day extension of the Black Sea Grain Agreement. But it looks like we've only got 60 between Russia and Ukraine, though that varies depending on where you're looking on the internet and what you see at this point. What do we know?
Yeah, basically, the headline is 120, then Putin was more in line with a 60-day agreement. But I think this is going to continue to be extended unless the conflict escalates tremendously in that growing region. I remember there's a lot of grain that needs to be moved out of that region. China has vested interest in there. So I believe it, even though if it may be 60 days, well, at the end of the 60 days, it'll be another 60-day window to work through in through there. The amount of grain, that's still a question mark in total. How much is actually sold and shipped? How much is actually stolen and shipped? Those are continued questions that the trade will figure out way down here after all of this is hopefully resolved.
Xi Jinping from China is on the ground in Russia and has been for a while now. I would think that the Black Sea Grain Agreement would be on his mind because so much of the grain coming out of the Ukraine and that Black Sea port area does ship not only to the Middle East but to China. What else do we are we worried about? Are we thinking about as it relates to the commodity markets and President Xi's visit to Russia?
This has actually been a little bit of a concern over a year ago when we saw headline pictures of Putin and Xi getting together and having a little clearer drink toast together. I don't know what was in there, but they've trying to form an alliance there. This meeting is going to be interesting. Is it making more of a commitment to each other, or is it actually trying to figure out a way to come to a peace agreement with Ukraine? I believe the next step would be to visit with the Ukrainians by video conference on that. So maybe they're trying to work something out. But on the other hand, I've heard or seen where the next step is to talk with Brazil, have a three-way agreement of some sort in a sense there. So there's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot of things we do not know. All I know is that if these two countries, three countries, start to work together, we're going to continue to be going down the path of losing market share around the world on the export side of the equation on that. So lots to be determined here. A lot of players, there's a lot of things out of our control. And we can probably, you know, keep an eye on the weather. We know what weather forecast is. We've got thick skin to weather. We've been dealing with weather from day one. But something like this, we just don't know which way the wind's blowing, Todd.
Last week, 4 days in a row, we'll stay with China. They purchased from the United States corn, and the amounts are announced sales, at least, I think, of about 83 million bushels. Did that continue at all this week, or is there an expectation that there will be more?
Total number that we've seen or heard from the commercial side of the division is maybe upwards of 4 to 5 million metric tons. We jumped over 2 million metric tons there late last week. Corn market kind of sputtered today because we didn't see any additional announcements. And I have a feeling over time and through here, there'll probably be some more announcements to come forward here. On the shipment side of the equation, we did ship about almost 1.2 million metric tons of corn. Wheat shipments were right there in that old 374,000 ton, beans 716. So we're shipping out what we sold. Corn is still lagging somewhat, but we got some time here to catch up, particularly if we continue to see some additional purchases from China.
Speaking of the export market and the competition, some of the beans that are shipped to China, a lot of them actually, come out of Brazil. It looks like that nation is harvesting a really big crop. Some of the numbers I saw on the bushels per acre this past week were really large, given that they were so very far north in that 80 bushel to the acre range. What do we know about the crop there?
Yeah, it's highly variable from area to area. Yeah, there are some tremendous yields in there. There's still some optimism. You know, we can be in that, you know, 153, 154 million metric ton. But there's some ideas that maybe that crop could be down to 150 to 151 million metric ton. So we'll see how that progress is there. They've got a lot to harvest yet. They're estimated to be about 60% complete with their harvest. There's going to be a little weather hiccups in through here. There's going to be a little transportation hiccups in through here. But the main concern will be on south of there into Argentina. 2 to 3% of the corn and bean crops, good to excellent. Those production estimates continue to erode away. Boots on the ground echo that what they're projecting is much, much, much worse. You know, some complete disasters in that Argentina area. So that's going to continue to play on transportation and logistic concerns out of that southern hemisphere as some of those beans and even corn move into Argentina.
A week from this Friday, not this Friday, but the following one on the 31st of the month, USDA will release both the quarterly grain stocks and the prospective planting report.
Came out and
do we have any early expectations or thoughts about what those two might look like?
In the bean acreage at 88.2 million acres. So that'll be a market maker. I believe the total thing to kind of look for is total corn and bean acres should be close to 180 million acres. So we can maybe see a few more bean acres pop out and through there. One thing to remember, though, is the bottom line is moved most by what type of yield we put on it. So you can move yield or acres up a million, down a million acres, but that harvested acres is kind of a benchmark to go by, but you got to tag some type of yield on there, and that's going to be the key in there. As far as grain stocks go, I believe it's going to be a little tighter from the standpoint this basis is just super strong. Crushing margins for bean grains were very, very good. Most producers are sold out of beans. Corn-wise, corn basis just continues to hang in through there. I don't know if it'll be this report or the next report. We'll get a handle on how tight things are. Might take a few reports, but the way this cash market is, I expect stocks will be tight.
Thanks, Kurt. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with farm policy and an issue that Chuck Grassley has visited over and over. He's the senator from Iowa. USDA, of course, is caught in something of a delicate balancing act when it comes to farm subsidy payment limits that seem to help big versus small and medium-sized operations.
Senator, I think there need to be realistic and reasonable limits.
That was not Chuck Grassley, but rather Tom Vilsack answering a question from Senator Grassley, who's been renewing his earlier failed bids to pass payment limits. And he asked Vilsack if such limits could keep big producers from getting bigger at the expense of smaller ones.
90% of farmers are, most of them are not making the majority of their money from farming. So the small and mid-sized producer doesn't get as much help as a larger producer.
Who gets more than three-quarters of their income from farming and thereby gets twice the subsidy, some $250,000, of the smaller one. But the answer is not simple.
We really need to understand and figure out how do we do this in a way that recognizes the capital contribution of large producers, but at the same time understands and appreciates that they may be in a better position to withstand a shock than the small and mid-sized person who's just on the edge every single year. It's tough.
Vilsack told Grassley the key is to create new revenue streams for smaller producers and that commodity-based markets alone will not keep them in business. Not mentioned was payment limit opposition by large southern operations and their congressional lawmakers, whose votes are needed to pass the farm bill. Speaking of legislation that some believe is needed, we'll talk a little bit about TPA here. America's top food and ag organizations, representing thousands of farmers, ranchers, producers, and workers, sent a letter to Congress urging action to improve ag exports. More than 50 of the most influential food and ag groups urge Congress to pass Trade Promotion Authority, otherwise known as TPA. TPA is regularly passed by Congress to give administrations the ability to cut trade deals. The letter notes when it comes to trade agreements with tariff reduction, the U.S. is falling behind global economic competitors like China and the European Union. Regrettably, it says, America is falling badly behind. Between 2010 and 2020, China and the EU enjoyed over twice as much advantage from trade agreement tariff reductions as the U.S. They also say the situation has gotten much worse this decade. The United States has not implemented a comprehensive trade agreement that opens new markets in more than a decade, groups add. USMCA, implemented under the Trump administration via TPA, was a simple update of the North American Free Trade Agreement that was struck in the 1990s. TPA expired, and the Biden administration has not moved to create any new trade deals as of yet. Well, let's switch gears, and we'll talk a bit about production and exports, but based on some realities on the ground. First, we'll start with drought relief in the western U.S. NOAA, or the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, says spring flooding is an ongoing problem in the western United States, especially in California. Remember, we started with drought relief. The abnormally wet winter will further improve drought across much of the western U.S., as a historically high snowpack melts in the months ahead. Winter precip combined with recent storms has eliminated exceptional and extreme drought in California for the first time since 2020 and is expected to further improve drought conditions this spring. Moisture in the spring is expected to improve drought conditions across parts of the northern and central plains. Drought conditions are expected to improve or disappear over the next 3 months in Florida. Areas of extreme exceptional drought across parts of the southern high plains are likely to persist through the spring season. Drought is also expected to develop in parts of New Mexico. In the northwest U.S. and northern Rockies, drought conditions are expected to continue. The other item in this area of production problems comes out of China, where African swine fever is making a resurgence and will potentially push prices higher for the most popular protein in the country. Bloomberg says multiple outbreaks have shown up in different parts of the country throughout the winter. Rabobank expects the most recent wave of ASF to significantly lower production capacity and push prices higher during the second quarter of 2023. The outbreak was the most severe in the northern regions of the country, and multiple areas are still struggling with the disease. Rabobank estimates say the latest wave has hit some 10% of the nation's sow herd, which controls hog production. An outbreak in 2018 and 19 decimated China's pig herd at the time, the largest herd in the world. The spike fueled inflation as pork is a key element in the Chinese Consumer Price Index. Official estimates say 8 to 15% of the total production could be lost in the current outbreak. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Illinois is utilizing some state and federal funds to respond to mental health issues on the farm. They call it the Farm Family Resource Initiative, says Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello.
We found a way with the federal government to access $500,000 for the Farm Family Resource Initiative. So we had the state monies appropriated by the legislature, but last year an extra $500,000 to make sure that farmers have the resources for mental health help, everything from telemedicine to a text hotline, an email form, and then still the call-in hotline, which is 833-FARM-SOS, which is for farmers. It's for their spouses, for their children, for anybody that works on a farm.
Well, the Farm Family Resource Initiative is administered through the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine.
If you are experiencing mental health issues, or God forbid, you're possibly in a suicidal situation, please, please, please reach out to 833-FARM-SOS. It is 100% confidential.
The SIU Med School will be hosting a Rural Health Summit on the 28th day of March. On a personal note here, I am really glad that the stigma that has been associated with mental health issues has begun to dissipate. It is simply something that happens with life. And if you are having some difficulties, reach out. Because people really do care, and the SIU School of Medicine, many other places can help out, and it will make a difference in your life. It's Monday. Let's check in with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin here in the United States. Start with the hard red winter wheat growing regions. What are conditions like?
Well, the southern part of the belt, including the heart of the western Kansas wheat acreage, still could use a lot more rain here, as there has not been any significant improvement. And looking ahead, there's just simply no sign of any major precip over the next couple of weeks, especially in the heart of the belt. Now, from a temperature standpoint, this current kind of stretch of cooler weather, it will keep growth to a minimum as the wheat slowly comes out of dormancy a bit later than normal. So that actually buys the crop a little bit of time here, since any growth is going to be on the slow side. So that's the one good piece of information with this pattern looking out into the early portion of April.
So why is it when California has gotten so much rain, and I keep track since the beginning of the calendar year, each year, across the Corn Belt, about how much rainfall has come in comparison to normal, and it's caught up, generally speaking, that it remains dry in that southwestern part of the United States? What are the patterns that are causing this?
Yeah, great question, Todd. So we've seen an abundant, a southerly displaced storm track aligned directly into California. And, you know, you've heard the term atmospheric rivers. There's been like 8 or 9 over the winter. But these storm systems that are within these atmospheric rivers, they're moving at least fast enough so that, you know, pretty much all the moisture gets wrung out over the western U.S. And then specifically in the southern plains, the storms are moving too fast to generate any kind of appreciable rainfall. Now, as they move east of the area into the eastern plains and more so Delta and Midwest, then moisture becomes more available. These storms are able to produce more precipitation, and that's why actually the Midwest and Delta of late have been on the wet side. And so there's this kind of no man's land that's been aligned there across the southern plains.
It sounds like they hit the Rocky Mountains, they pop a wheelie, dump a hole back, a bunch of water on the back end, jump across the southern plains, and then they meet up, maybe, I guess, with moisture from the Gulf when they hit the Midwest. Kind of an interesting way to think about what's been happening. On that note, as I suggested, it appears that at least for the calendar year, a lot of the Midwest has caught up. I want to know about both the eastern and the western Corn Belt. Ohio, Indiana were suffering some issues as we went through fall, and then, of course, the western part of the Corn Belt as well, as it relates to dry conditions. Have they recouped what they need for the springtime?
They're certainly much improved. I guess they haven't fully eliminated some of the long-term drought or some of the low subsoil moisture levels, but certainly topsoil moisture is much, much improved. Now, recently, the western Corn Belt has been a little bit drier. They've been a little bit more involved with that plains hard red winter wheat dryness, but certainly a much improved situation. And it looks like more rain is on the way here for the Midwest and Delta region. So those continued improvement in soil moisture as we head to April.
It is the 20th day of March. The Delta, the parts of Texas, other places in the mid-America will be moving really quite soon. What are you thinking about as it relates to field work this spring?
Still looks to be on the slower side here, especially due to here in the wetter and cooler bias, even in areas of the Delta. So with this pattern, we see the pace of fieldwork operations being on the slower side. Now, I guess the far southern acreage kind of in around Louisiana following this cooler weather over the next few days, that'll help at least, you know, help a little bit, but then there's more rain coming. So bottom line is that the pace is going to be on the slower side at this very early stage of the season across the southern U.S.
Did Argentina get rain recently?
They did. They started to see some thunderstorm development over the weekend, but actually more is on the way, and that is the main takeaway here for Argentina. And what's looking to be very unsettled weather for the balance of this week, producing even some very heavy rainfall in a few areas. So quite a bit of a different pattern in Argentina, but actually beyond 2 weeks, indications that drier weather returns. So this looks more of a blip versus a long-term pattern change.
Any thoughts about what's happening in Brazil that we should consider?
Yeah, so bottom line here is the pattern's a little more open for soybean harvesting and winter corn planting, especially in and around Paraná the next couple of weeks. Not ideal, but certainly better than what it has been. So that'll help increase the pace of soybean harvesting and winter corn planting. And but we, I guess further up north, we don't see anything that would be exceptionally wet, like in areas of Mato Grosso or any kind of, you know, real major heavy rainfall to cause big-time wetness problems.
Hey, thank you much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.